Blog Talk Radio.
Diciamo apura tanu apura tightnut metinde ujirapo quisi ra nempata akan apong mine maruka etiki mu ujirapo ujiramine mu. Greetings to all apura kani apura kani people, many Africans, black people. Today is Ojirada Ojira Day, Purification Day. My name is Ojirapo quisi ra nempata akan. Ojirapo, the Apamu nation in North America, within Ojiramine, the purified nation, Apurakani, Apurakani people, African black people in the Western Hemisphere. Yet I say we thank you once again for tuning into the broadcast. We have opened up the chat room. If you have any questions or comments and you'd like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised so that we can connect with you. For those who are new to the broadcast, we have 4 broadcasts on a weekly basis. We have taken a hiatus for a number of months while we were producing and releasing our newly released documentary film, Amarukafo Adebisa, African American Ancestral Divination. We've released that film. It is screening in multiple cities. You'll see a list of the various cities. We are confirming dates for those cities. We'll be in Canada this weekend. We've been to Philly and Washington, D.C., Hartford, Connecticut, Atlanta. We're planning to go to 40 cities total in the United States. So those dates are being confirmed on every few days and so forth. So we took a hiatus, but we're back broadcasting now. We have 4 broadcasts on a weekly basis. We have Akanpo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestry Religion on Joga on Monday nights, where we deal specifically with the Akan expression of ancestry religion, first and foremost because we are Akan. As Akan people in North America, we practice the Hoodoo tradition, which is Akan ancestry religion in North America, but we are Akan, so first and foremost, this is the reason we have a specific show dealing with Akan ancestry religion, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan ancestry religion, culture, cosmology, ritual practice from individuals in the Western Hemisphere, inclusive of the United States, as well as from individuals on the continent of Apuraka, Apuraikai, Africa, who are Akan, but who have been infected with white pseudo-religion, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, and so forth, white culture in general, and therefore their expression of Akan ancestry religion manifests that infection. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion, Akanpo Nanasom, on our broadcast on Joga Monday nights, that deals with our ancestral origins as Akan people in ancient Kanat, which is a title of Nubia, the Khan land, first land, foremost land. Our people migrated from ancient Kanat or Nubia 2,000 years ago after the fall of Kemet in northern Kanat or Nubia. We reestablished the Kanat Empire, the western part of the continent, the Ghana Empire, Empire of Ghana. Hundreds of years subsequent to that, some of our people migrated further south towards the forest belt and savannah regions to reestablish a Kanat civilization in those regions. Centuries later, some of our people were taken from those regions and forced into North Central South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the Musuokesie, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. And this is how we ended up as Akan people in the Western Hemisphere. However, we maintained our ancestral religious practices. Thus, in Suriname, South America, you find the Akan tradition is called Winti, from the Akan term Winti. In Guyana, Akan ancestral religion is called Komfa, from the Akan term of Komfo. In Jamaica, Akan ancestral religion is called Obia, from the Akan term Obai. In the United States, in North America, Akan ancestral religion is called Hoodoo, from the Akan term Undu, which means medicine from roots, trees, plant life, that is root work. Hoodoo or Undu also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. We also use the term conjure or kanje, which comes from the Akan term kanche, which means to utter incantations to bring down the spirits. And we find these same terms, undu and kanche, hoodoo and conjure, in the language of ancient Kana and Kemet, and the Medutu, the hieroglyphs with the same definitions. So we deal with ancient authentic Akan ancestral religion. It is through our ancestral religious practices that our ancestresses and ancestors were guided and empowered to wage war against the whites and their offspring, forced the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere, inclusive of the United States of America. So we deal with that culture and cosmology and truthery on Joda Monday nights. On Avukuda Akuda Wednesday night, we have Egua Marketplace, where we showcase Akura Kani Apura Kaini businesses, organizations, and institutions, those who are serving our community in a positive capacity, those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of their service to the community. So we typically showcase one business, organization, or institution on a weekly basis and target that business for optimal capital infusion through our Okom economic development model, wherein we starve the beast and feed the pride, redirect funds away from white businesses and direct them to the business, organization, or institution of the week. We also deal with the philosophical foundation of Okom economic development model, our approach to economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values. On our Yowza broadcast, Thursday broadcast, also called Yada and Abada, Thursday night broadcast, we have Amain Sim, Affairs of the Nation, where we deal with issues that are confronting us as an Omain, as a nation, specifically as Ojiraman, the purified nation, Akura Kani, Akura Kani people, black people in the Western Hemisphere. We recognize that we must approach our issues from a what we call an Amanie perspective, a nationist perspective. We talk about nationism, Amanie, the purification of nationalism. It is an approach to nation-building restoration rooted in our ancestral religious values. Therefore, it is a holistic approach to nation-building. So we confront the issues that confront us as a community from a nationist perspective. So that's what we deal with on Amain Sim, Affairs of the Nation. Tonight is Ben Nada, also called Abin Nada, which is Tuesday, and we have Ojida, which means purification. We deal with ancestral religion in general, not just the Akan expression, but wherever Akura Kani, Akura Kani people, African black people exist in the world, wherever we have migrated or were forced to migrate, we take our ancestral religious practices with us. Ancestral religion impacts every aspect of our lives. So when we talk about ancestral religion, we talk about its definition in essence is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That means through ritual we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to restore balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions, and thus realign ourselves with divine order. Our culture as Akura Kani, Afra Kaini people, African black people, is the divine acceptance, the law, the love of order, and the divine rejection, the divine hate, the repulsion of disorder and its purveyors. We seek to align every thought, intention, and action every moment of every day with divine order. That is our culture. When we make legitimate mistakes, we engage the ritual process to incorporate divine law and the ritual process to restore divine balance so we can get back on track with aligning every thought, every intention, and every action, every moment of every day with divine order. So we state that Ojida, purification, operationalizes Nanasom. Nanasom is just a general term for ancestral religion, Akura Kani, Akura Kani, or African ancestral religion, in its varied expression. Ojida purification operationalizes ancestral religious practices, the ritual incorporation of divine law, the ritual restoration of divine balance. So we deal with Ojida purification, meaning we purify concepts, purify cosmology, purify our understanding of our ancestral religious practices, inclusive of how we brought our ancestral religion into the Western Hemisphere in our spirit genetic blood circles. We transmitted our ancestral religious practices intergenerationally and transcarnationally, and it's through these ancestral religious practices that we were guided and empowered once again to wage war against the whites and their offspring and force the end of enslavement. We deal with truth, truthery, and we eradicate these false concepts of these fictional false pseudo-religions inclusive of Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism, Jainism, all of these foolish pseudo-religions with the fictional cartoon characters who never existed of any race or in any form whatsoever, inclusive of Jesus, Yeshua, Yeshua ben Pandera, Esau, Yahawasha, whatever title people want to use. There was no Jesus, black, white, or otherwise. There was no Muhammad, no Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Buddha, Brahmin, Yahweh, Allah, Mahavira. None of these characters existed of any race or of any form. Our people have been enslaved with these fake traditions, foolish traditions, inclusive of some of our individuals who promote themselves as Afrocentric but are still enslaved and have a sentimental attachment to these fake traditions and fictional characters and would simply like to blacken them up to make themselves feel better about being attached to these fictional cartoon characters, but at the end of the day, they are fictional. So we deal with Ojida purification of concepts, culture, cosmology, and so forth. So tonight's broadcast is Shu and Tefnut, twin flame deities, Abosom deities of Gemini in the original zodiac. So, of course, we publish, and you will see a link in the description for the broadcast. You'll see an image of Shu and Tefnut, these two divinities. You'll see a link, and we can put this link in the chat room as well, but you'll see a link to one of our articles where we posted a chart, and it was a short article. This is the Achinebwa article. It says Achinebwa, sacred animal totems, original zodiac signs in Kemet. And we'll put that link in the chat room right now. We're showing that these various zodiac, quote-unquote, zodiac signs, there are 12 constellations that cross the ecliptic at this point in time. Previously, there are 13 that cross the ecliptic now. Previously, there were 12 because of the precession of the equinoxes, the different position of the Earth. There are now 12 constellations that cross the ecliptic in the course of 365 and a quarter days. There are 13 zodiac signs and so forth. Or constellations. We talk about how these constellations or groupings of stars, of course, our sun is a star, but the groupings of stars are powerhouses. These are shrines, specific configurations of energy that conform to the energy projection of specific deities, forces in creation. The same divinities that animate the sun, moon, oceans, rivers, fire, atmosphere, black substance of space, various stars, and so forth, they take up residence in specific constellations of stars. Those are the shrines for those deities. So when you're dealing with actual quote-unquote astrology, and our people, the priests and priestesses who are dealing with time, when you look at the titles of the priests and priestesses who were dealing with Unnut or time, these were the quote-unquote astrologers in ancient Kemet. But what we're talking about is actual deities that we invoke and communicate directly with. The same deities that possess our people in Vodou, possess our people in Juju, possess our people in Hoodoo, possess our people in Wanga and Gangayang in North America and Obia and Winti and the various traditions in the Western Hemisphere as well as on the continent in the Yoruba tradition, Akan, and so forth. These are the same deities that have been possessing our people, the forces in nature that have been possessing our people, communicating with our people for hundreds of thousands of years. They take up residence. These certain constellations radiate a specific configuration of energy that conforms to that divinity, so those are the shrines of those deities. When you're dealing with real quote-unquote astrology, you're communicating with these forces in creation. Of course, only Apurakani people, African black people, can communicate with the divinities because they only communicate with us. Plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Apurakani human life have access to the forces in creation because we're the only created entities in the world. The whites and offspring are spiritually degenerate, cancerous cells that have degenerated from the original. They are cancerous cells in the body of black humanity, just like the cancerous cells that develop within your body. They're not embraced. Your body separates them, isolates them through the immune lymphatic systems, and then exterminates them and expels them from the body. That is the divine response for the cancerous living entities who seek to consume and destroy all of the healthy cells. That is the nature of the wife and their offspring. So the deities don't communicate with them, never have and never will. So only our people have that capacity. When we look at the animal totems, so the various quote-unquote zodiacal signs and so forth, these totems come from these divinities that are thousands of years old that predate Babylon, predate Greece by thousands of years. These same animal totems born in Apuraka, Apuraikai, as we communicate with the deities, and we carried them up into the Near East when we established the ancient civilization of Sumer, which later becomes known as Akkad or Akkara, later becomes known as Babylon thousands of years later. And then when the white and offspring invade the Near East and North Apuraka, Apuraikai, they learn about the quote-unquote zodiac signs and so forth from our people. But they originated in Apuraka, Apuraikai, so we have a proper understanding only when we communicate directly with them. And the same is true, you have an astrologer who actually communicates with the forces in creation intuitively, instinctively, ritually, then they're engaged in a real process. If they're not engaged in that, if they don't have that capacity, then they're just memorizing some texts, memorizing some writings, and are hit or miss with regard to what they're talking about. So we're bringing this information back full circle. We talked about last night Pisces. We talked about the fish goddess Anit and the fish god Ntoro Remi, also called Abju, the original deities that govern Pisces and so forth. Tonight we're talking about Shu and Tafnut, the original twin flame deities, Abosom, Orisha, Vodu, Ntoro 2, and so forth, who govern the so-called constellation Gemini. Even when you see the calendar or the image in the Temple of Dendera or from the Temple of Dendera in ancient Kemet in the late period, when you're looking at the twin constellation, you're looking at Shu and Tafnut. It is not Castor and Pollux. It's not two males. It's the balance of male and female, Shu and Tefnut. So we want to get into this, who Shu and Tefnut are, where they exist in creation, within our bodies and so forth, and get some additional information. All of this information, as we have done with our other books, very often we'll do broadcasts. Those who follow our broadcasts understand that when we come forward with new information, sometimes we publish the information first via a broadcast, and then we publish it in a book later on. We have this information. We don't want to sit on the information and make people wait until the book comes out. So we will put the information forward on the broadcast, and then we publish it later. This, the same is true with regard to this information regarding the Achine Boa, the original signs of the zodiac. We have 31 books that we have published to date. All 31 can be downloaded for free from our website at any time. This is our 347th broadcast. All of our broadcasts are free downloads as well, but we have many more books coming out. The 31 books we have out now is just the beginning. We have many, at least another 31 more than that. So let's get into this information. So Shu and Tefnut are two male and female forces in creation. They are twin divinities. And there's a reason why we said twin flame divinities. This, we did a broadcast on Baiti, the twin flame, and the origin and cosmology of the notion of this twin flame phenomenon, this information put forward by the Weiss and their offspring with their industry around twin flames and twin flame spirituality. They do not know what they're talking about. They put forward a great deal of misinformation. They have no understanding about the origin and cosmology of twin flames. They can't even give you the history of it. They start talking about Plato and talking about the Kabbalah, which is pure nonsense. We put forward our broadcast, Baiti, the twin flame, original twin flame divinities in that cosmology back in June. That was the first time that anyone learned that Shu and Tefnut are the original twin flame deities, and they govern that phenomenon. So we went into detail about that whole notion and the relationship and so forth. We're going to get into some other information in relation to that tonight. Shu and Tefnut are children, twins of Atem and Atase Nebetetet. Now, when you see the deity Atem in the red setting sun sailing across the sky, and you see Atem in the red setting sun, sometimes the sun appears to be red. You see the deity Atem sitting inside the red setting sun. So when you're talking about the formation of Earth, when the first noun first rose up out of the primordial ocean at the beginning of creation, Ra and Ra, the creator and creatress, caused that primordial mountain to rise up. When the first sunset occurs, when you see the sun setting upon the primordial mound for the first time, that is akin to that fiery energy penetrating the primordial earth to harden the primordial earth to make it a solid landmass so that plant life, animal life, mineral life, and eventually Afro-Arcani, African black human life can take root and so forth. So you'll see in the text, Atem, Tem means red. Tem means to bring to an end, to finish, to complete. Tem also means hard, compact substance. The red setting sun setting in the west, that's the end or the completion, Tem, of the day. The red setting sun, red, Tem means red as well. Tem meaning hard, compact substance when that hot, fiery disk goes into the primordial earth, just like you have in a pottery class, you're using clay, you use water to fashion the clay and put it on a potter's wheel and so forth. But once it's fashioned, then you put it in a kiln, you put it in an oven to harden it, and then you have a structure. When that primordial mound rose up out of the primordial ocean at the beginning of creation, still wet and so forth, that first sunset or that fiery energy penetrates the primordial earth, Tim, hard, compact substance. So in the text, Atem says, I could not find a place whereupon I could stand. Then I laid a foundation through the deity Ma'ah and began to create all things. After he sets in the red setting sun, lays the foundation by hardening the primordial mound and so forth, and now things can be created. Then the text in the Nesi Men Papyrus talks about Atem creating plant life and animal life and mineral life, and in connection with Ra, the first men and women and so forth, in association with Asase Nebetetet, the wife of Atem. So Asase Nebetetet is the fertile earth mother divinity. You also have Asase Nebetet, the barren earth mother divinity. You have Atem, who's the husband of Asase Nebetetet, and you have Kepra, the beetle divinity, who's the husband of Asase Nebetet. But Atem, the red, this fiery energy going into the primordial earth, hardening the primordial earth, connecting with the primordial earth, and then the primordial earth and Atem coming together, the male and female divinity, to give birth to Shu and Tefnut, those first twins, and then the text states that Shu and Tefnut give birth to Geb and Nut, which is the earth and sky, meaning the earth's crust and sky. And you see Geb laying on the ground and Nut bent over him in an arch, and you see the stars in her body. She's the atmosphere. You see the stars through her body, and she's bent over the primordial earth, but it's really the earth's crust, which is Geb. And then they talk about Geb and Nut, the children of Shu and Tefnut, Geb and Nut, earth and sky, giving birth to two sets of twins themselves, Osar, Offset, Set, and Nebehet. And Osar, that black soil substance coming from the crust of earth, which is Geb, Offset is the river waters of earth at this primordial time. Set is the red soil substance, the desert as well as the red clay. And Nebet-Het is the rain waters of earth. So you have Geb and Nut, earth and sky, giving birth to Osar, Offset, Set, and Nebet-Het. Black soil substance, river waters, red soil substance, rain waters. And then Osar and Offset eventually give birth to Heru and so forth. Set and Nebet-Het give birth to Anpu. So we have this lineage that we're talking about. But before earth crust and atmosphere come into being, Geb and Nut, their parents are Shu and Tefnut. Now, here's a piece that we are introducing. Where are Shu and Tefnut found in creation? In our text, Afuraka, Afuraka is the origin of the term Africa. We talk about the lineage of kings, the primordial divine dynasties in ancient Kemet. When they talk about the first king of earth was Ptah, the deity Ptah, they talk about a lineage of divine, a divine dynasty, a lineage of rulers who were deities, and then later on, our ancestors and ancestors took the throne of rulership and they became rulers and so forth. But they talk about the divine dynasties beginning with the god Ptah, the Abosom Ptah, the same as Sakpata in Vodun, the same as Obaluaye in Yoruba, this is the same as Obuade in Akan. This is why they talk about Obuade or Obaluaye in Yoruba or Obuade in Akan, Obaluaye in Yoruba, Sakpata or Dadazoji in Vodun being the first king of earth. It's the same in ancient Kemet, the same divinity, Ptah being the first king of earth. Then the son of Ptah is Atem. Atem is the next king. After Atem, if his son is Shu, he becomes the next king. After Shu, the next son is Geb. He becomes the ruler of earth. After Geb, Osar, his son becomes the ruler of earth. Then Osar is killed and sent. His brother takes up rulership, but then it is adjudicated that the son of Osar is the rightful heir to the throne. So Eru becomes the next ruler of earth and so forth. So you have Ptah, Atem, Shu, Geb, Osar, that lineage of divine, you know, deities, the divine dynasty. In our text, Afuraka, Afuraka, the origin of the term Africa, when we published the first three installments that are in the book over 10 years ago, we talked about that transfer of kingship from Ptah to Atem to Shu and to Geb and so forth. As manifest through the earth, you're talking about the development of the earth. These are shrines of these deities within the developing earth. Ptah is in the inner core. That's the origin, the root. Then next is Atem, which is the lower mantle. Then next is Shu, which operates through the upper mantle. Then next is Geb, which operates through the crust. Next is Osar, which operates through the black soil substance above the crust. And then, of course, the son of Osar is Eru. So in successive generations, you have the unfolding of the development of earth from the inner core to the lower mantle, to the upper mantle, to the crust, and to the black soil substance on the surface. Now, we were talking about that specific lineage just to elucidate the fact that when you're talking about earth, you're talking about that transfer of rulership or divine kingship as the earth is unfolding and perpetually as well. So when you get to the Atem, which is the lower mantle, and then you get to Shu, which is the upper mantle, of course, Atem, as well as Asate Nebetetepet, the earth mother divinity in the lower mantle, they give birth, Atem and Asate Nebetetepet, to Shu and Tefnut, which is the upper mantle. So Shu and Tefnut are in the upper mantle. That's very key because the term Shu means fire in ancient Kemet. Shu means fire in Akan. Tefnut, the root tef, meaning to spit or expectorate, to release water, and nut is the container. But tef or tefi, meaning to release water and so forth in ancient Kemet. Ntafi means to spit or release water in Akan. So Shu and Tafnut, or Tafi or Tafnut, is that fire and water in ancient Kemet. Shu and Tafi is that fire and expansive water in the Akan tradition. So, of course, when you're looking at that succession within Earth, we talked about Shu being the upper mantle. When you look at the upper mantle of Earth, it is molten rock. So, of course, that is the fire of Shu. When you see the name Shu spelled in the Medusa, they will show not only the feather, the great feather, but they also show very often the sun disk, showing that that feather is fanning the flames of the sun disk. It's an expansive fire. Shu is expansive fire, and Tefnut is that contractive aspect of the fire, fiery water, and so forth. So you have Shu in the upper mantle. That makes perfect sense, of course, because the upper mantle is molten rock. It's that internal fire of the earth, part of that thermal heat within the earth that's keeping the earth warm and so forth. So Shu meaning fire, Shu and Sheol meaning to burn and so forth, that fiery divinity, that expansive force within the earth, of course, that's in the mantle. But then Tefnut is the wife of Shu. And Tefnut we talked about with regard to water. So some people will say, well, how could Tefnut be inside molten rock? Shu, it makes sense, but Tefnut, she has to do with water, and all the texts talk about her being associated with water. How does that connect? Our Unsamantwar, Nananom Unsamantwar, spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors directed us and showed us that Shu and Tefnut are in the upper mantle. Shu is in the molten rock, that's the fiery energy within the molten rock. And they showed us that Tefnut, that means that there is water within the molten rock in the mantle. And that's why they told us to publish that. So that's why we published it. Now, the key is, if you look on a website, for example, livescience.com, there's an article called Found, and it says exclamation point found, hidden ocean locked up deep in Earth's mantle. Deep within Earth's rocky mantle, this was published in June of 13,014, so called 2014, deep within Earth's rocky mantle lies oceans worth of water locked up in a type of mineral called ringwoodite. New research shows. The results of the study will help scientists understand Earth's water cycle and how plate tectonics moves water between the surface of the planet and the interior reservoirs, researchers say. The Earth's mantle is the hot, rocky layer between the planet's core and crust. Scientists have long suspected that the Earth's so-called transition zone, which sits between the upper and lower mantle, layers 255 to 410 miles below Earth's surface, could contain water trapped in rare minerals. However, direct evidence for this water has been lacking until now. This was published 4 years ago. So they just discovered and confirmed that there was water, but then they also confirmed to their surprise that there is at least as much water within the hot, molten mantle of the earth as the oceans on the surface, more than likely even more than that. So there's oceans worth of water, as it says, within the mantle. That hot water within the mantle is the domain of Tefnut. She's dealing with that hot water, and then the fiery energy within the rocky mantle is Shu. Our ancestresses and ancestors over 10 years ago had us publish that information with regard to Shu being in the upper mantle. And of course, Tefnut associated with that, and later broadcast talking about that, because they knew what was what. The wife and their offspring just 4 years ago published this information as being represented as a discovery of this ocean's worth of reservoir water within the mantle. So we point that out just to showcase the reality. We also have an example of Ptah, who's at the inner core, who is married to Sekhmet, the fiery divinity. Ptah, as we talked about, governs the brain, the formative power of the brain and functions of the brain in the hypothalamus and so forth. And Sekhmet is his wife. She governs the lymphatic system. So when he's operating through the brain, he's in the Anebuhetch, which that's a sacred shrine in ancient Kemet, which means white walls. The white walls in the brain on the cerebral cortex, left, white and left hemispheres, the whitish, matter of the cerebral cortex, that is the sacred sanctuary of Ptah. He dwells within the white walls, within the hypothalamus. And then, of course, you have Sekhmet. She governs the lymphatic system. And therefore, since she's married to Ptah, there's a lymphatic structure within the brain that connects with Ptah when he's operating through the brain. We've talked about that over the years. Just a few years ago, the Whites and Their Offspring, through research, accidentally came upon the lymphatic structure in the brain. Up until that point, for over 100 years, every medical book, every book on anatomy, stated that the lymphatic system did not reach the brain. But they were doing an experiment in another field, in another area, and the scientists stumbled across the lymphatic structure in the brain. You can Google lymphatic structure in the brain and you will find the discovery, and they're talking about how they have to rewrite all books on anatomy and all medical students study and so forth, and just anything published on anatomy, they have to rewrite all the books that people have been studying from for over 100 years. They assumed that they had mapped out all the structures within the body. They found the lymphatic structure in the brain just a few years ago. All books have to be rewritten. However, our ancestors and ancestors, through our cosmology, have taught us that Ptah, who operates through the brain, this is why he's in the limbic system. This is why he wears the skull cap. The limbic deals with the cap and so forth, and this is why he dwells within the white walls of Anebuhetch, which is the cerebral cortex, white fleshy, you know, matter and so forth. And he's married to Sekhmet. We already knew she had a lymphatic structure within the brain because they're married there. So we've been teaching that for years. Our cosmology has laid that out. And then the Whites and Their Offspring catch up later. Just like they're catching up later now, they did the same thing when they invaded ancient Kanit and Kemet. They learned about these various things from our people, and then they will publish things later, or quote-unquote stumble upon things later that we've been teaching and activating and operationalizing for thousands of years through ritual invocation of Ptah and Sekhmet. We stimulate our, the limbic system of the brain as well as the lymphatic system for our health, for our benefit. So that's just another example. The same is true here. So the shrine of Shu and Tafnut within Earth is the upper mantle, the rocky molten core, Shu, fire, and so forth. But then the water is that, it's not cool water, but that hot water, Tafnut. She operates through that reservoir of water in the transition zone of the upper mantle that they just discovered, but we've already known about, and it's woven into our cosmology. This is why the lower mantle, you have Atem and Asati Nebetetepet. They give birth to their twins, Shu and Tefnut, in the upper mantle, and Shu and Tefnut give birth to their twins, Geb and Nut, which is the crust of Earth and the atmosphere. They give birth to their two sets of twins, Asar, Aset, Set, Nebetet, black soil substance, river waters, red soil substance, rain waters. Our culture lays out the reality of creation. Now, in your physical body, we have shrines of Shu and Tafnut as well. If you look at the two major structures that deal with the generation of heat and fire within the body. And by the way, when we talk about the upper mantle and the hot water in the upper mantle and so forth, that manifests sometimes on the surface of Earth. And when you look at the image we use for the promotion for the show, you see a body of water that is one of the hot springs in the deserts of ancient Kemet. This notion of hot springs or thermal springs, there are certain areas of Earth you go and water bubbles up in a spring, and they're called hot springs or thermal springs. Sometimes the water is warm and you can go get warm. You see steam rising from that hot spring naturally occurring. But sometimes the water is so hot that you cannot get in the water. It will burn you. It will scald you. That water is coming up from the mantle. It's coming up from the mantle through the crust and manifesting on Earth. That those hot springs are a manifestation of the shrine of Tefnut coming up from the mantle, the transition zone of the mantle, up through Earth. And, of course, the fiery energy of the mantle, where Shu is operant, that spirit of Shu, that expansive force of Shu is operant within that shrine, the fiery molten rock of the mantle. It rises up through the earth and manifests in the atmosphere. So you will see the fiery expansive energy of the air in the atmosphere, and you'll see Shu separating Geb, who's laying on the ground, and Nut, who's bent over him, and he's separating earth from sky and so forth. She was in between lifting Newt up and so forth. Let that fiery energy manifest within the born of and manifest a shine within the core, I'm sorry, in the molten mantle, manifesting on the surface through the air, that expansive energy, fiery energy within the air. And then top Newt is that fiery, hot water moisture manifesting on the surface through these hot springs, and the moisture, the hot moisture in the air as well. So we have that internally within in the earth, but then they manifest on the surface as well. In our physical body, these twins, these sacred twins, and we're going to get into this notion of twin flame, but these sacred twins in the body, there are two areas where you can generate heat within the body. Of course, through arousal in the reproductive organs, heat can be generated through arousal, but then the other area where you generate heat and fire, and there's an engine of heat and fire, is within the lungs. And the lungs, of course, are twins. Within the lungs, you have a number of different structures. The bronchial tubes in the right and left lungs are the plants of the north and south that you see in ancient Kemetic. You see the Smai Tai Wei symbol, and you see the plant of the north and the plant of the south bound around the trachea and the lungs and so forth. That's what's being shown. And, of course, Wachet and Nekabet are connected to those plants and so forth. We talk about that in our publications. But then you have the tissue of the lungs, but then you have the pleural cavity and the pleura itself. You have this membrane that surrounds the lungs and protects the lungs, connected to the thorax on the outside and protects the lungs on the inside. And you have the pleural cavity, that membrane that has water within it and so forth. That's that hot water surrounding the fiery generating engine of fire within the body that is akin to Shu and Tefnut in the mantle within the body. So when you have that membrane and then the water within the membrane, that fiery energy within the lungs that's being generated, you breathe in air, you take in the life force energy of the sun and so forth, you breathe that in, you expand and contract the lungs, you generate that fire. It's within that pleural cavity and the pleura around the lungs, around the lung tissue that is protecting the lungs. Just like you have the core, you have the heart, which is the core, you have the core of earth, and then expanding from the core, you have the outer core, and then you have the lower mantle and you have the upper mantle. You have the heart, which is the core, and then you have the lungs, you have the tissues of the lungs, and then you have the pleura, which is the membrane surrounding that, but then you have the pleural cavity, and you have water within that pleural cavity. If there's a problem, then you can have too much water within the pleural cavity that's generated, and then you have water upon the lungs and so forth. In the natural, you know, state, a healthy state, balanced state, there's a proper amount of water and fire within that lung structure. And as it expands and contracts, you can generate more fire, or you can cool down and retain more water. You have Shu and Tefnut expansion and contraction operating within that structure, within the lung structure, that fiery energy expansion and contraction within the lung structure. So we have them in earth. We have them via the surface of earth through the fire in the atmosphere, within the air, as well as the hot springs, that watery substance, that we have them within the lungs. Now let's get into cosmologically Shu and Tefnut as these divine twins specifically associated with this notion of a twin flame. First and foremost, Shu means fire. Sometimes Shu and Tefnut are called the Shu Ti. Ti means dual. T in ancient Kemet means two or dual. It's the origin of the Proto-Indo-European root T, which becomes Tiu or two, and that is the root of du or duo, dual, twin, di like dipole and so forth, meaning two. It comes from T in ancient Kemet. So Shu T is a title of Shu and Tefnut. They're called the two or twin, T, Shu, the twin fire. you will see Tafanut with a solar disk on her head surmounted by a serpent. Even though she's dealing with water and contraction and Shua's expansion, the kind of water she's dealing with typically is that fire water, that hot water from the hot springs coming from the primordial earth. So this is what we're dealing with when we're talking about the Shuti. In the Medutu, in the hieroglyphs, you'll see the Shuti, two feathers. They are fanning the flames of the energy. What energy are they fanning the flames of? When the lungs expand and contract, they are like they're like a set of wings. There's a bird sitting in your chest. The spirit in ancient Kemet is called the Ba, for males, Vaidus for females. So you have a spirit, a divine living spirit, a life force entity dwelling within you. You have a soul, which is your Ka or Ka, that's akin to your brain. Your brain has all of the blueprints of everything that should happen within your body. It has the quote-unquote materials or instructions, directions, and everything, all of the knowledge you need. That's the brain. Spiritually, the brain is the seat of the Ka, that is your spirit's brain. It's a spiritual entity sitting in your head that has your divine function in creation. It is a male divinity if you're male, a female divinity if you're female. It has your divine function, how you are to operate, what role you have to play in the world and so forth, how you have to wield your energy and so forth. That is all written into your spirit's brain, which is the Ka. You have a physical brain, which is that entity sitting in your head right now. You're in your spirit body, in the region of the spiritual head, there's a spiritual radiant force, and that is the spirit's brain. That is the Ka, or Ka'et, which in English is called the soul. Then you have the spirit, the divine living energy surging through your spirit body. Just like you have blood surging through your physical body, and the blood carries oxygen, and the oxygen carries energy, fire energy, and so forth. In your spirit body, you have life force energy surging through that spiritual form that gives it that animation. It's the direct energetic link to the creator and creatress who give us our divine living energy. So you have a spirit, which is Ba for males, Ba'at for females, and you have a soul, which is Ka and Ka'at. The soul is the force in the head region. The spirit is the divine living energy permeating your entire spirit body. But it has its seat as a shrine in the lung structure, and they show the Ba as a little bird with the head of the human being. Sometimes they show it as a bird fully. Sometimes it's the body of a bird, but the head of the human being the bird belongs to, male or female. When you look at the bird, and it has a bowl of burning incense with a flame rising out of it, showing that the bird has wings, that's an animate wings, burning bowl of incense with a flame, fire, an animate fire. That's what the Ba is, an animate, winged, fire, flame. Divine living energy, life force energy is an animate fire. So you have your lungs, the two lungs look like the wings of a bird folded down, and then the heart is like the breast of the bird, and then you have your head on top of that. That's the little bird sitting inside of your body. That's the Ba bird that you see in ancient Kemet, with the head of the human being that the spirit belongs to, dwelling within you. When you expand and contract your lungs, that's the wings of the bird expanding and contracting and fanning the flames of the divine living energy within you to fire you up, arouse that energy, fire you up, and so forth. That fanning of the flames, one of those feathers are used to spell the name Shu and Shuti, the twin Shu feathers of flame. So we just want to give that background. So when we're talking about the Shuti or the two flames, the twin Shu and Tefnut, the twin flames, there's a cosmological foundation. There are two different aspects of the cosmology we want to look at, talking about Shu and Tefnut, first defining them as the twin flames, and then talking about that notion of twin flames with regards to relationships, and then we want to talk about them as, you know, Gemini and so forth. So we're going to look in the Runu Perkin Heru, the so-called Book of the Coming Forth by Day, misnomer Book of the Dead. If you look in chapter 17, We went through this in detail in the Twin Flame broadcast, IEC, the origin and nature of the Twin Flame. We're not going to go through the whole piece. We just want to specifically focus here on Shu and Tefnut, their nature as a Twin Flame, and then we're going to move on to the other texts. So there's a specific section where they're talking about in the spirit realm, when Ra and Asar come together and unite and function in one body. They unite and function in the same vessel. The energy of Ra and the energy of Asar work together, operating within the same spirit body. And when we talk about spirit possession, once again, as we've mentioned before, when someone's possessed by a deity, we see people drumming, ritual drumming, and a spirit comes down and possesses someone. That's akin to you driving a car. Someone gets inside the car. You get in the back seat. They take the wheel and they drive the car. Two people in the same vessel. But the original driver is taking the back seat. They're not in control of where the vessel is going. The driver is in control. And they take the vessel somewhere, whatever direction. Once they finish what they're doing, they leave the vehicle. You get back in the front seat and you take control of the vessel. Your spirit is animating your physical body. When a deity possesses or an ancestral spirit possesses, you move into the quote-unquote back of the physical body, and the spirit is in the foreground, and they are moving through your body, operating through your body, touching people, laying hands on people, healing people, divining for people, admonishing people, healing people or whatever, warning people and so forth, and then the spirit leaves the body, and you move back through the foreground. In the same fashion, the deities take up residence in planets. You have certain deities in the core, certain deities in the mantle, a number of different deities operating within the same orb. In this particular text, they're talking about the union of functioning of Asar and Ra, and then it leads to Shu and Tefnut. So first it says, it talks about something that took place, and it said, what then is it? It says, it is Asar. When he goes into Jejedu, the region of Jejedu, which is a region of ancient Kemet, a region of the spirit realm, but also the Jejedu, the Jed pillar, which is the spine, the spiritual spine. When he goes into Jejedu and he finds there the Ba, the divine living energy of Ra, they embrace one another there in the Jed pillar, which is the spine and so forth, the energy going up the spine. They unite in the Jed pillar. And then it says, comes into existence the Bayou or the spirits within the two Cha Fi or the dual Cha. As concerning the dual Cha or the twin Cha, it is Heru, the avenger of his father, and Heru, Mkinti, Ariti, Heru without his eyes or otherwise said, it is the Ba of Ra, it is the Ba of Asar. It is the Ba that is within Shu. It is the Ba that is within Tefnut. The dual Ba, which is within the Jed pillar. So when you look at your spine, and people talk about in India, Gita and Pingala, crisscrossing the spine and going up and then eventually uniting in the third eye area and then the crown chakra and so forth. Of course, that doesn't originate in India. In our book, On the Origin of the Term Yoga, Kara, Kasa, the origin and nature of the chakra, we show proof that these concepts, including the term yoga and the term, you know, the term yug in Proto-Indo-European comes from yunk or ankh in ancient Kemet, and kara is where they get the term kakra or chakra. We show that in the Bedu through the hieroglyphs that predates anything in India by thousands of years. So they talk about that energy in the spine, moving up the spine and eventually uniting. The origin is right here. The Jed pillar is at the top of the spine. There's one at the base in the sacrum, but then there's one at the top of the spine. And Ra and Asar unite within that Jed pillar. The two spirits unite and then begin to function in that Jed pillar. There's a twin souls or twin spirits that manifest within that dual union. And it says it is the Ba that is within Shu and the Ba that is within Tefnut. The Ba is spelled as a bird with a burning bowl of incense with a flame arising. When it says the twin Ba, it means the twin flame spirit literally. So Shu and Tapnut are the twin flames, literally. Shu literally meaning flame or fire. And Shu-Ti meaning the twin Ti, Shu, or flame. Now, that's that expansion and contraction within the lungs, that fiery energy within the lungs, expansion and contraction of the fire and water within the lungs that fires us up, expands and contracts our energy, allows us to move and operate and have vitality and so forth. Shu and Tapnut governs that. If there's an issue with that energetic output, then you lose your vitality. You become weak. You don't have the vitality to operate, to execute your functioning creation. You become susceptible to others' energy or discordant energy because you don't have the fire to burn away these impurities and repel these negative projections of other entities. If there's weakness in that area, for example, in the lung area, and it manifests spiritually, people are having anxiety attacks, panic attacks, all these different things, grief and so forth being held within the lungs, and that's just a manifestation not only of physiologically a low vitality, but being out of harmony with Shu and Tefnut in their shrines within your body. They have that balanced energy of the two lungs and the fire and water within the two lungs, twin forces that maintain our balance. If you don't have Shu and Tefnut operating harmoniously, then you're out of balance with your vitality. But when you have them operating harmoniously, you can expand your energy, you can operate, you can execute your function in the world. You have the capacity to see what needs to be done and execute it properly. But if you lose that alignment with Shu and Tefnut, it manifests in the area where they manifest, and then you have anxiety, you have a weight in your chest and so forth. You're having all kinds of quote-unquote panic attacks, anxiety disorder, all these different things. What manifests is quote-unquote grief or major depressive disorder and these various different things, but we're talking about a disalignment from these divinities. When you look at the texts of ancient Kemet, these are not just stories. We're not just reading stories. This is not just literature, as Egyptologists would say. These texts of ancient Kemet with the names of these deities in our ancestral language, these are ritual invocations that we're reading. When they're read in the language, these were read, they were chanted, they were sung. Just like we engage in ritual prayer at our shrines now or at ritual, chant and sing, ritual song, ritual chants, ritual prayer, and then people become possessed by the Orisha, possessed by the Abosom, possessed by the Vodou, possessed by the Ntorotu, the deities, as well as the Nananom and Samanfo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors of our blood circles. Those ritual sound vibrations, those ritual invocations bring forth kanche, to utter incantations, to bring forth the spirits, the spirit possession, communication, divination, healing, and so forth, and protection, defense. So these are ritual invocations. They simply wrote them down, but nobody had to read them. Just like you go to a hoodoo ritual or Akan ritual on the continent or Hoodoo ritual in North America. You go to a Yoruba ritual or Orisha ritual on the continent or Juju ritual in North America, which is the Orisha tradition in North America. People are not reading prayer, they're chanting and engaging in ritual prayer because they know that. But of course, we wrote things down as well in ancient Kemet, we can read them now. These things were read, they were chanted, they were sung. These are ritual invocations. When you read these ritual invocations, talking about these deities, like the one we just read, when you read it in the language, ritually, you are invoking Shu and Tapnut as you're reading them, as you're reciting them. And that helps to realign you with these divinities and bring that balance back to their shrine within your body, which is the lung structure within the body. And you can get back in alignment with them, and you can overcome these anxiety disorders, panic attacks, as well as low vitality physiologically, negative spiritual attacks and emotional, misguided emotional projections, even those people are deliberately sending negative emotional, projections ritually to people sending negative discarnate spirits to people to try to control them and so forth, and it manifests as mental illness. The people seeing spirits and can't control the inflow and outflow of these communications and so forth, and they have schizophrenia and these various different things. When you deal with the realignment through ritual invocation of these deities, whether you're reading these texts or utilizing the ritual prayers we already have in our traditions that we've maintained, you align with the deities, you reconnect your spirit energy, your little portion of energy with theirs, you rejuvenate your store of energy, and you have the capacity to repel discordant vibrations, discordant entities, strengthen your physical body, strengthen your spirit body, get back in harmony with order through these ritual invocations. So we're not just reading literature, we're actually engaged in something. This is what this twin energy operating within the lungs as a shrine is dealing with. Without Shuan Tefnu, you're not going to be breathing, you're not going to have that vitality, proper balanced vitality of fiery, watery energy within the lungs to move. Without Shuan Tefnu, there's no heat on earth, there's no water on earth, because the stores of water that come from the mantle is the original origin of the oceans on earth. So without her, there won't be any origins, oceans on the surface, because without her in the mantle, there is no water. There's no life. Without Shu, that fiery energy in the mantle and manifesting the warmth of the atmosphere and so forth, connecting with the solar energy of the sun that's retained in the atmosphere, without Shu and Tefnut, there's no life on earth. Without Shu and Tefnut constantly expanding and contracting within their shrine, within the body, within the lungs, there's no life. So we're dependent on them, but also when we're in alignment with them, not only do they keep us alive, balanced, and so forth, but then it goes spiritually, mentally, emotionally. When we're in balance with Shu and Tefnut, these twins, then we're balanced in our outlook, balanced in our thoughts, intentions, and actions as well. But when we're not, when we become disaligned, then it impacts us in a specific way. And you can always tell how it impacts us by the shrines that the deities govern. Some deities govern the liver. When people are out of alignment with that divinity, then you have these emotional issues and fear issues and so forth, out of alignment with the divinity that has a shrine within the lungs. You have this anxiety and everything else, depression, all these different things. Whatever shrines are governing different aspects of the physical body, whatever deities govern that, when you're out of alignment with those divinities, it manifests in the areas, the shrines within the physical body and spirit body that they govern. So now let's move along to this notion of the other aspect of the cosmology of Shu and Tefnut. We talked about this briefly in the other broadcast about the twin flame, talking about this story of the distant goddess. You'll read in ancient Kemet, Egyptologists talking about this cosmological cycle of the distant goddess. And it's talking about this notion of Tefnut separating, becoming disenchanted with what was going on, the affairs of the nation. So she became disenchanted, and she decided, you know what, I'm going to leave. And she left. And she went to the south. She left Kemet and went to the south and went to, Kanit, Nubia. But when she left, she took all of the water with her. And everybody was dry and parched, but people were suffering, and the whole nation was suffering because Tefnut left the country. She separated from Shu. And she left and went into Kani, into Nubia. Everybody suffered. Then Ra, the creator, directed Shu to go and reconnect with his twin flame. And he sent Tahuti with him so they can go and connect with Tefnut. Tahuti was giving that divine wisdom or guidance in the proper reconnection of these twin flames. And then, of course, Tefnut learned that divine wisdom as well and adhered to that. And eventually, Shu and Tefnut reconnected, and they came back from Kanit, Nubia, and came back to Kemet. And every place that she went, water was replenished in every place, and abundance was brought back to the land. So there was a separation between the twin flames. There was suffering and so forth in the nation. But then they reconnected through the agency of wisdom, divine wisdom, and divination, because Tahuti deals with divine wisdom and divination, finding out what is in harmony with order. They were connected, reconnected based on wisdom, divine, the manifestation of divine order, and then they returned in their balanced functioning within the world, and there was no more anxiety. There was no more parched, quote-unquote, lungs or anxiety or, you know, panic within the culture. The, you know, balance returned, the emotional stability returned, the economy, economic stability returned, and so forth. One of the things we need to point out in that story, we published a document, a short document, a five-page document a number of years ago, and we linked it in this broadcast, Shu Tefnut Sekhmet Shiva Kali Durga. And what we show in that particular document, just as an aside, but it's also very important because people get this information mixed up, we show the image of Shu and Tefnut. We show their names spelled in the Medusu, the Shu T. In this particular manifestation, they're called Shu T or the dual Shu. So it's the two feathers, it's the loaf for the T and the two strokes for the I sound, so it's Shu T. And then there's an image of the male divinity, bearded divinity, seated and shrouded, and the female divinity seated and shrouded, the determinative. This is Shu and Tefnut as Shu T, the dual Shu. That's important because the U, when you have the, originally you have the V sound, hundreds of years later, it evolved into the U character, and then hundreds of years after that, the U evolved into the double U, which is two U's side by side or two V's side by side. This is why you have W and V and U are interchangeable linguistically. In European languages, you have some people pronounce the name William, others pronounce it Wilhelm. You have Sweden, they pronounce it Sweden, but you can have it in our ancestral languages, which is most important. For example, you have Eze, the Eze people in Togo and parts of Ghana and Benin and so forth, but they also pronounce it Ewe. You have the Ovambo people in Namibia and Angola, they also pronounce it Owambo, so there's an interchange between the V and the W as well as the U. That's very important because Shu, with the S-H-U, or S-H-W, Shu, corrupted into Shuv, or Shuva, which becomes S-H-V in the European languages, and this S-H-V becomes Shiva or Shiva in Hinduism. We show etymologically how S-H-U becomes S-H-V, it's that Shiv or Shiva, as they pronounce it. Shu as Shiva was originally worshipped by the Dravidians, the original black people, who had migrated from ancient Africa into India and established civilization. But the invading white Aryans had no knowledge of Shiva, which is Shu, prior to their invasions. This is why there is no etymological root for Shiva in Aryan Sanskrit. This is also why Shiva is not mentioned in the Vedas, the so-called sacred texts of the Brahmins. The Tamil or Dravidian language root Shiva, meaning reddened or angry, is a reference to the fire of Shu. So we talk about Shu and Tefnut governing expansion and contraction, the air and breathing. They can be found in your lungs and so forth. They are inside the fire. Shu also means fire, just like it means in Akan. It also is the feather, and it fans the flames of the fire and so forth. So we talk about a little bit about that, but that's that fire reddened and so forth. They are children of Atem and Asase Nebetetepet. Atem is in the red sun. They're children of that red sun, so you have that red fiery energy. Shu or Shiva meaning reddened and so forth, but it goes further. It should be mentioned that for those who may point out that Shiva is inferred to be Rudra, R-U-D-R-A, Rudra, in the Vedas, understand that one of the titles of Shu and Tefnut is Ruruta, which is where they get Rudra from in the Medusu in the hieroglyphs. So we show Ruruta in the Medusu as Shu and Tefnut. And later on in the Vedas, they say Rudra, and trying to say, well, that's really Shiva, because Shiva wasn't mentioned in the Vedas. But once again, it goes back to Shu and Tefnut, pre-Aryan invasion. Now, there's a reason why we mention all of that, because you go a little bit further down We talk about the life cycle and the distant goddess and, you know, Tefnut separating and leaving and going to southern, you know, to Nubia and so forth and being brought back. The key here is that Shiva and Shakti, one of the titles of Shakti is Kali. So Shiva and Shakti is also Shiva and Kali. This is Shu and Tefnut. Now, Sekhmet is a totally different divinity. Sekhmet is not Kali. That's totally inaccurate. We've had people going around even giving presentations and creating a whole philosophy about how Sekhmet is Kali and doing presentations and getting paid for it. 100% false. And even just a basic cursory glance at the text shows that conclusively. But when you understand the cosmology, you understand that the divinity Durga, D-U-R-G-A, in Hinduism, is where they stole, that's Sekhmet, and they stole that from ancient Kemet. The birth of Durga and her being the warrioress and being born of the light and everything else, that's the birth of Sekhmet, being born from the eye of Ra, the warrioress goddess, the whole piece. So Shiva, Shakti, and Durga, or Shiva, Kali, and Durga is Shu, Tefnut, and Sekhmet. Sekhmet is not the distant goddess who went to the south and then came back and was drawn back by Shu. It was actually Tefnut. Tefnut is a lioness-headed divinity with a sun disk, solar disk on her head surmounted by a serpent. Sekhmet is a lioness divinity with a solar disk on her head surmounted by a serpent, so they look very similar. They have similar functions, but of course Sekhmet uses her fire through the lymphatic system to destroy disorder, the cancerous cells, and so forth. She's the enforceress of divine order. She is the divine hate of the supreme beings, the divine hatress, where Heruvedesi is the male divinity of divine hate. He's divine hater, quote-unquote. She's divine hatress, like a hunter and a huntress. There's a hater and hatress. They execute and enforce the divine hate of the supreme being, the destruction of disorder for the maintenance of divine order. And then, you know, Shu and Tefnut are the fire, expansion and contraction in the fire and water and so forth that maintains our vitality. But through that maintenance of vitality, that expansion of, you know, fire and water also repels disordered entities. But once they're repelled, then Heruvedesi and Sekhmet can come and destroy them. You can reject them, and then you can annihilate them, eviscerate them. So they work together in that fashion. So we have to address that just to show that these individuals running around talking about Sekhmet as Kali and creating names and Facebook pages and retreats based on that, total foolishness, totally inaccurate, easily disproven, textually disproven. But when you really understand the cosmology and actually deal with these deities, you'd have known that from the beginning. So, because they wouldn't allow you to call them that. Tefnut wouldn't allow you to say that, you know, Sekhmet is the one who went to the south and came back and is the distant goddess and so forth. She wouldn't allow that. Sekhmet wouldn't allow you to call her Kali. She would have shown you that just by your invocation for her communication with her. So we just wanted to go through that information. So the key here is we have Shu and Tefnut. They're operating within the earth, within the mantle, including the reservoir of water in the mantle that manifests as hot springs on earth. They operate through the atmosphere within the warmth and fiery energy in the air, as well as the moisture in the air and the hot springs and so forth. On the surface of earth, they manifest their shrines within the lungs, the twin structure within the physical body of Apurakani people only. And it's that plural membrane, the plural fluid, and the plural membrane, including the plural cavity, encasing the lungs and so forth. That is the shrine, sanctuary, seat of operation of Shu and Tefnut within our bodies as they're expanding and contracting and generating that divine living fire, fanning the flames of that divine living fire within us, that Ba, or Ba'at spirit within us. And that Ba, Ba'at spirit within us, operate through Shu and Tefnut. They are the twin Ba, or the T, twin Ba, God fell with a flame, burning bowl of incense with a flame arising from it. The twin spirit flame, twin flame divinity. They're also called the shoot, T meaning twin, shoot, twin flames, and so forth. And that whole cosmology of the separation of the twin flames and they're coming back together based on wisdom and divination has to do with our relationships as well. When we separate and we come back together based on wisdom, being the guidance of Tehuti as well as Seshat, then we can fuse back together and connect with the individual whose divine functioning creation actually aligns with our divine functioning creation. And, you know, we have order. We have order within our individual relationships, and that, of course, impacts our nation-building endeavor. First, we get together on an individual basis. We come together as a couple through divine order and marriage and so forth. We establish order within our homes, and we connect with others who are engaged in the same process. And as we're connecting with others who are engaged in the same process, rooted in our ancestral religious values, guided by Tehuti and Seshat, divine wisdom and so forth, we engage the nation-building process firmly rooted in ancestral religious values, not rooted in pseudo-white religion or blackening-based religion or pseudo-concepts like socialism and that kind of foolishness that has always been self-destructive and unworkable and ineffective and unsuccessful from the gate. So this is the information we wanted to go over. Of course, once again, we're going to have this information within, in an upcoming publication. One of the things we talked about early on, mentioned again today, we'll be in Canada this weekend screening our film, Amarukapo Adibisa, African-American Ancestral Divination. We also will be screening in different cities. We sent out an email earlier today talking about that and the trip and so forth. We also, in that email, talked about the DVDs, pre-orders, as well as tickets. We're going to be going to about 37 more cities. You can order your tickets now. When you order your tickets, $15 for a ticket, your receipt for your order is your ticket of entry. You can use that receipt as a ticket for any screening in any city you desire. Some of the dates we have coming up that we'll be posting on the website. So even if you order the ticket now, whatever dates that are confirmed in any city, you can choose to go to any city you want to, because you've already paid for a ticket that's good anywhere. We also have the pre-order DVD at the pre-order price of $15, but we have a discount. One ticket or one DVD is $15. Three tickets or three DVDs is $40 instead of $45. Five tickets or five DVDs is $60 instead of $75. And 10 tickets or an order of 10 DVDs instead of 150, 10 times 15 is actually $100 for 10 DVDs or 10 tickets. And you can have these multiple tickets. You can give them as gifts. You can give them to your students, give them to your clients, family, co-workers as gifts. Ordering 10 tickets, that's a $10 gift for 10 different people, and they're being empowered when they see this film. The film is 2 hours and 17 minutes, and we would call it an edumentary instead of a documentary. It's actually something to study. The information you learn from all the participants, Voodoo Queen Galinda Lavoe representing Voodoo or Voodoo, Mama Mawusi Ashakir representing Juju, which is the Yoruba tradition in North America, the Wanga tradition, which is Ovambo Gulla, represented by Wabet Seshat Tutankwajet out of Florida, the Ngangan tradition, which is the Fang tradition, that Fang ancestral religion in North America. F-A-N-G, Fang, the people from Cameroon and Gabon, continued the Ngangan tradition in North America. Rekit Kajara Nia Yadnebihet, and we screened the film with her in Georgia, in Atlanta, a few weeks ago. Myself, representing the Hoodoo tradition, which is Akan ancestral religion in North America. All of us are in the film, 2 hours and 17 minutes. It's an edumentary. It's something to be studied like an encyclopedia over and over again. The more you listen, the more things you'll be able to pick up and so forth. And it's a great gift. So we're trying to raise funds for the venues as well as for the additional unexpected travel expenses came up this week, so we need to cover that. So if you can order the one of the multiple sets, whether it's a couple of DVDs or a couple of tickets. You can look on the website and you'll see those discounts that will greatly assist us to deal with these extra expenses, as well as confirm these dates for venues in your city right away. We're going to confirm some more dates this week so we can be out in your city next week. And continuing on, we're going to be having multiple screenings per week in different cities until we get through these various cities across the country. So if you can take this a minute right now, go to the website, ojdapo.com, amadocapo_adivisa.html, order a couple of tickets or order a couple of DVDs. That will greatly assist us. We appreciate the support. Some people have already ordered a few DVDs today, right before we came on air. As a matter of fact, an elder ordered the 5 set for $60, 5 DVDs. So, you know, we put those DVDs out. She'll be able to give those out to youth, to adults, to whoever she works with and so forth, and that'll be a great gift for them. So please check that out right now. That will greatly assist us. So, again, Yerase, we thank you for tuning into this broadcast. And Yebeshi Abio, we will meet again. Exactly.